Oh, right, now it's working. Okay, so I'll have to add in the extra bits for Rachel and Tanya. All right. And now we found paragraph 15. Okay, no, sorry. So that he, if you remember, we looked at the issue of truth, that truth is the seal, that the true way to study, to practice Torah mitzvot is unconditionally. And to start off with, we work through falsehood, and this is why truth was thrown down to the ground. Okay, any questions, any comments? It's kind of a revision to all, or a sort of summary to everything that we've done, isn't it? Yes? No?
It's a graduate level, and I think we might still be kindergartners.
Is that what you're feeling?
Well, sometimes it's so clear, it's like it penetrates through me, and other times it just sits there on the surface, and I think it's not going anywhere. And it's just a little deep, that's all. But it ebbs and flows like that. That's just how it works.
It's always like that. So you mean like if that material is that hard, then you can't even find any questions to ask?
That's what I'm saying, yes.
That's true. I noticed that. I noticed that for myself as well. Humph. How about you, Alina?
I think I got stuck on the piece, the first paragraph, and it was hard for me to hear the other two. Oh, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Oh dear, you should say if you can't hear. Is that better?
Oh, no, I heard. No, it wasn't that I couldn't hear. I heard, but I kind of got stuck on this covenant of peace. And
Okay, all right,
I
so let's
guess my question is what does that look like? Because when I look at the world and the Jewish people, and it is it like a messianic kind of vision, the peace that it will come through a lot of destruction, or like what is exactly the promise or what we were given as a covenant?
I think what he's saying here is the word peace, and this took me a long time to figure out also, because he's only got it in this one tiny bracket here. What he means by peace is children. It's because when a man and wife have marital relationships together, that's called shalom bayit. And what he's saying is that originally in Gan Eden, Adam had like this one beautiful eternal soul, which was in complete affinity of form with God, which was only giving, only in the framework of giving. And then he went through this whole process of eating from the tree of knowledge, which was a necessary process that God tells us was necessary because man's purpose was actually to correct the huge vessels of receiving. And in fact, Eve, when she ate from the tree of knowledge, was correct in understanding that she really did need to do that. She had greater wisdom than Adam. She had greater understanding. She understood that that really was their purpose. And why is it the purpose of man to have these vessels of receiving, the ego? It's because we are the only creature in the whole of creation who can actually transfer energy from the framework of evil to the framework of holiness. So you've got in, if you imagine Gan Eden, as a microcosm, you've got the framework of holiness, which is all the trees in the garden, and you've got the tree of knowledge of good and evil stuck in the middle. Okay, So that's the representative of the framework of evil in the garden. Now, at that time, Adam and Eve were able, they had the ability, just like animals have now, they had the ability to just walk over and just feel if something was good or bad. If it felt good, it was good. If it felt bad, it was bad. And Eve had wandered over at a previous time, and she'd gone close enough nearly to touch the tree, and she could feel the evil in it. She didn't even need to touch it. She could even just feel it, that it was evil. And when the serpent, the snake, started to discuss this tree with her, or discuss why she was there, whatever, she understood something, which was what her purpose was. And this was the truth that the snake told her. And this was definitely true. And she understood that, in fact, that God did not create anything evil. And the fact that she could sense it as evil was because she needed to correct it. She and Adam together needed to correct this tree and bring it into the framework of holiness. And so therefore, she and Adam dedicated themselves to only eating from this tree, which would be receiving from it, only for the sake of giving a pleasure to God, only from the sake of giving to God. And she understood that that was to be her their purpose. And Adam understood this too, and so they ate. Now, what happened as a consequence of their eating was that, first of all, they were correct. That was their purpose. But what they didn't understand was why God had told Adam, don't eat from it. He said, if you eat from it, you will surely die. That was also true. And the reason was they didn't have the capability of dealing with this huge framework of evil. It's like imagining if you had the whole of all the evil of the world from the beginning, from its very beginning to the very end, in one apple, and you're going to transform the whole thing in one go. It's impossible. We can't even manage, you know, one tiny midah, you know, in a year, you know, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you know, Rosh Hashanah around to the next Rosh Hashanah. How would they, you know, they just didn't have the capacity to do this. And that was what was, that was what didn't work for them. Oh, Jody suddenly disappeared. Let me see what's happened. Let me just
add. Dia?
Yeah?
This is Mia. I'm going to have to go because I have to be somewhere. And I apologize for this, but I just have to leave early today.
Okay, love. All right. Well, I was just sort of giving a sort of like an easier summary because I figured that, you know, more.
I know. I don't want to miss it, but unfortunately, I have to go.
All right, Mia, love. Okay. Bye then.
Okay. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. And Jody suddenly disappeared as well. Gracious. Oh, well. All we can do is carry on.
Sounds good.
Okay, so that's what went wrong. Now, as a consequence of eating this huge thing. Oh, good. Oh, no, Jody's not back yet. And the consequence of eating this thing, their one soul left them because they were now taken into the framework of evil. They couldn't transform it. It was too much for them. And they ate a second time. And the second time they ate, because they were overwhelmed by it, was just for their wills to receive for themselves alone. It was just from the ego. And to satisfy their appetites. And the one soul which God had given them had left them. And so because God had left them, the answer is, well, the question is, how can God's purpose be fulfilled? Oh, good, Jody's back again. Hello, love.
Okay, sorry. Okay. I lost you guys, but back.
Oh, you're back. All right. So the question was how could one God's purpose be fulfilled once they'd eaten from this tree of knowledge? And the answer is through children. Through the fact that human beings make one long chain, that one soul didn't disappear, it split into all the incarnations of life from the beginning to the end. And this is through our children, through passing on what we've got to give to our children, we and to each other, we are connecting and making this one long chain. And that's the shalom. This whole chain together is the shalom. So the marital relations is called shalom bayit when we make a child, but it's also the shalom that we have when we connect with each other and learn with each other and teach with each other. It's not just father to son, it's also from woman to woman and man to man and friends to friends and neighbors to neighbors. We connect, it's this huge connection with all the souls together, make both horizontally and vertically, that is the shalom. That's what the shalom is. It's this connections between the souls.
I think it's a fascinating story. And when you, you know, we know that story of Adam and Eve, and it's like, why were there no children in the Garden of Eden? And sort of maybe this explains it, because Adam and Eve had everything, and that was godliness. And I think it's just fascinating that when, you know, we all got that little shard, you know, this is, I just think the whole story and put in all these, you know, finally connecting all these dots is really fascinating to me. And there's no question that the story of, that peace and having shalom is the only way in existence, you know, whether it means in having children or, you know, loving your neighbor or your family, you know, the whole thing. So I think it's just amazing. So I'm really so excited to hear that getting through this, the story.
I know, you know, until you mentioned it just now, I didn't realize, but of course they didn't have children in the Garden of Eden, because they were like the whole thing.
So they were everything.
They were everything. Yeah. They were the whole of humankind in the Garden of Eden. It's like we were there in the Garden of Eden. We were inside that experience as well. We were there. We were part of that soul that did all this. This is incredible.
It's fascinating. And it really helps each individual to really understand what that power, how much power each of us really has within us. It's, you know, really, when you hear, you yeah. know, right? I mean, we've trudged through years of studying and whatever, weeks of working on this long, you know, amazing piece and so on to get us to this point. And sometimes you hear it and it sounds so deep, but really it's almost so basic. You know what I'm saying?
It really is. I mean,
we never thought about it. I mean, have you ever thought about why did Adam and Eve not have children? I mean, it was a perfect place for young kids, for maybe, you know, to be raised children.
Sure. But they were, they were everything. And so, I mean, when we really take that in, that the whole of the human race is past, present, and future is one soul. And that is the basis of shalom. I think what Alina asks, you know, is this Mashiach? In a way, yes, because when we really come to understand that the whole of the human race is one soul. We all came from Adam and Eve. We are together, all together, the one soul that makes up the human, that makes up the one soul that God created. And this is the shalom. This is incredible. And Ravashtag is looking at it in terms of also how we can pass on whatever mitzvahs, whatever Torah, whatever understandings we have attained, we can pass on to our children. We can pass them on into that one long shel shelet, into that one, into this one long chain. We can give to our children, we can give to our neighbors, we can give to our friends, we can give out whatever we've managed to attain in understanding, we can give it out. And by giving it out, we're creating that shalom. And I think it's important because if we look at the uncorrected part of humanity, where we've got so many thousands, millions of people who are so cut off from themselves, from their souls, from who they are, and are just sunk in materialism, okay? It's part of us that's sunk in materialism. That's what really is. And by helping each other, we can just lift, you know, another person out, another person out, another person out, and become into, you know, positive consciousness. I mean, this is what I really see as, you know, Ki Nitzion Tetzei Torah Dvar Shem Yerushalayim, that from Zion will come forth the Torah and the word of God from Jerusalem, that the whole of the idea of the Torah is not just for the, you know, Jewish people, but it's that the word of God, the great wisdom, will spread out on consciousness and love and compassion to everybody. And ultimately, the whole of the souls, all the souls, will come back into the framework of holiness. And then we will all be back in the Garden of Eden.
Amen. Kelly.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it in my mind that, the, you know, that it's coming closer, that you've got this, you know, incredible role of the internet that connects people and can, you know, give these connections, and we can connect with other people and we can reach out with other people. We can do it. Another aspect in which we can see this aspect of shalom, I think, is in fact the fact that Rav Ashlag writes in one of his other articles that in fact most of us are souls which incarnate and reincarnate and reincarnate again and again and again. So that he says in fact we're the same souls. It's not as many souls as it looks, you know, on the in the number of bodies. It looks like huge numbers of souls. It's not as many as that, because the souls reincarnate and reincarnate. He says, we are the same souls that were there at the time of the flood. We are the same souls that went into Egypt. We're the same souls that came out of Egypt. We're the same souls that stood at Mount Sinai. We're the same souls that died in the wilderness. We're the same souls that went into Eretz Israel. We're the same souls that were there at the time of the temple, at the time when it got destroyed. The same souls that were the time of the second temple. We were there in the during all the exiles. We are the same souls that have come back again and again and again and again. Okay, to transform another aspect from the framework of evil and bring it into the framework of good. So each time we're correcting these aspects of the tree of knowledge, which was taken into us, and bringing it through into the framework of holiness. Because everybody in their childhood gets vessels of difficulty, I would say. It's in childhood that we get them. Like he says, when a person is young, he's fed by the Sitra Achra. Freud wasn't wrong when he says when you want to look at psychological problems, you look in childhood. Rabbi Ashlag in a way is saying the same thing, except he's not calling it psychological problems. What he's saying is that the framework of evil is taken into the person whilst he's a child, okay? And then that's the raw material that he works with through the rest of his life, correcting it and building on it and coming, bringing it each piece by piece into holiness. So, you know, instead of like blaming the parents for not doing this or that or causing whatever they caused, the truth of the matter is they were just agents of God who were giving to that particular soul whatever it was they needed so that they would have the work that they precisely would be able to do, moving their work from the framework of evil to the framework of good, okay, throughout their lives. Because, as Rabbi Ashlag wrote in this article, a person cannot do a tikkun on what he doesn't have. If he doesn't have with what to make a tikkun, he's got nothing to litaken. So he's, you know, just being in the framework of holiness when everything's, you know, being in the Garden of Eden when everything's beautiful and bright, we would all love that. But that's not our purpose. Our purpose is actually to do the work. Of course I would love that. I would love to be in the Garden of Eden. But we're not there yet. I guess we get a little taste on Shabbos and Yom Tov. On Shabbos and Yom Tov we get the taste of the Garden of Eden. A little taste. Somehow. Oh, yeah. Does that kind of make it all a little clearer? Alina, did that answer your question? I thought it was a brilliant question, by the way.
Yes.
Hooray!
Yes, it did answer my question. Thank you.
Brilliant. It was a brilliant question.
I have another question.
Good.
So when you said about the... were the same souls coming over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But there's so many more bodies. So does that mean that those souls are more fractured? And what's the ramification of that? Or what does that all mean?
I'm sure that's true. I've read just a tiny bit in one of the Ari's books, or Rabbi Chaim Vital's books. He's got a book on Gilgulim, Shah Gilgulim it's called. And, or I think it was there, or I don't know, it said something about Rabbi Chaim Vital's soul himself was a combination of Rabbi Akiva and a spark of this and a spark of that. And I mean, it's beyond me. I have absolutely no idea what that means. All I understand so far is that, for example, if you were to count up all the human population from this year dot to now, you would end up with, I don't know, you know, trillions or something. But since the souls are coming again and again and again and again, in fact, it's nowhere near as many as that, because the same souls are just using new bodies each time. So it's not as many as that. But you're right. I mean, the population is growing the whole time. So are the souls... parts of souls? Possibly. It would make sense. It would make sense that they were. I don't think it matters in any way. It just means that instead of being given, like, you know, 10 tasks to fulfill in one lifetime, each half soul would get 5 and 5, kind of thing. They would be portioning out the tasks. That to me makes sense. So I think that overall it doesn't matter.
So with that logic, that means that the tikkun is closer because it's much easier. You've taken so much of the load off of one person, so the possibility for him to complete his tikkun or her tikkun goes up. So then
Absolutely.
We are getting closer to the final tikkun. That makes sense to me.
It makes sense to me as well. I think so, because there's a very famous verse in Isaiah which says, "Be'ita Achishena. In other words, that if we do tshuva, the redemption can come at any time. That would be Achishena, I will hasten it. But if we don't, then it comes Be'ita in its time, which means there is a set time for the redemption to come, no matter what state we're in. Now, in order for that to happen, you have to have, you know, what you said, like the soul split up and dividing out the tasks so that we get to finish everything, you know, in the time given for the redemption to happen. And we can see that the redemption does have to happen in a set time. Because if it doesn't, man, unfortunately, has got the capability of destroying the planet. I mean, I'm just my mouth is just open at the folly and idiocy of, you know, supplying and allowing, you know, brutal regimes to have nuclear weapons. The contract signed with Iran is just the ultimate of folly. Now I've just found out in the news recently, in this last week, that America has stored 50 nuclear warheads with Turkey. And now we've had, you know, a coup in Turkey, and nobody really knows what's going on there. I mean, the planet itself is in so much danger that Mashiach has to come very soon. So I think that's one of the reasons that, like, we can see that it's, you know, it has to happen soon, just from the existential threats facing humanity, facing the world, but also from everything that Rabbi Ashlag wrote and Rav Kook wrote, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu said, we are the last, Rabbi Lubavitch said, these great tzaddikim could not all be wrong. They said, we are the generation before Mashiach, we are the generation of the footsteps of Mashiach. Mashiach is now. So it's very, very, very close, yeah. I mean, you know, I feel it's so close that I personally don't want to leave Israel. I want to be here when Mashiach comes. I want to be here to say hello. I don't want to go on a trip. I don't want to go abroad. I don't want to go anywhere. I want to just be here because I'm sure he's coming. In many ways, I'm sure he's present now. Because if you think about it, for somebody to be Mashiach, he can't be a kid. He's got to grow and be mature enough to handle whatever Mashiach is going to have to handle. So he can't be, you know, it can't be a kid when he's needed. He's got to be a grown man. So, Mashiach, I feel Mashiach is here.
Okay, Dita, maybe this is a very fundamental, simple question, but where does it say in the Torah that Mashiach is an actual person and not a consciousness or a state of consciousness?
Now, that's a very, very, very good question. The Rambam brings it. Now, where I read that recently, I think it was in, the Rambam takes actually a verse from Bilam's prophecy of all people. Now, let me find, we had Balak recently, didn't we? It was the very end of it when Bilam is prophesying at the end of days. Where was it now? It was one of the last verses of Bilam. I can't remember which one it was. I'm pretty sure. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I'll have to look it up.
It's okay, but it's Rambam and...
Yeah, the Rambam himself, the Rambam says that as a person, but you know what? I don't... When it happens, I won't mind. If it turns out not to be a person, turns out to be a woman, not a man, if it turns out to be a consciousness, I'll be so delighted. I won't care. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't really, you know, it's not a question in that sense that has ever occupied me that much. I sort of myself think as Mashiach as a teacher. And he will teach the Torah of love and compassion and consciousness. And that's how I think of Mashiach. But you're right. And in the sense of a consciousness, that Rav Ashlag brings that aspect actually, because he says, this is the reason why we need to be studying the Kabbalah, because he says, if we don't have the consciousness, we won't be able to understand Mashiach when he comes. So the two ideas of Mashiach as a person and Mashiach as a consciousness are very connected. He says it's from the verse in Daniel, Hanoten Chochma Lachakimin, he who gives wisdom to the wise. And what he means is that a person needs to have the preparation of understanding the Torah of Mashiach so that when he comes to hear the Torah of Mashiach, when Mashiach or the consciousness comes or Mashiach himself comes, he will be able to understand it and relate to it and connect with it. If not, then we'll have another Jesus story with a crucifixion. Do you see what I'm saying? We need to have, and this is why the Rabbi of Lubavitch also said, we need to be studying Mashiach and studying what he teaches and studying the Kabbalah. Rabbi Lubavitch used different language, but he meant the same thing. So again, that when the Mashiach comes and teaches compassion and Torah and giving, we will actually have the vessels with which to understand him and be able to receive his teaching. If we don't have that, we won't even be able to hear him. And that's why it's so important for the dissemination of the Kabbalah. So the consciousness of Mashiach and Mashiach himself are ultimately, you know, very connected together. And the consciousness of Mashiach is basically what we learn when we learn the Kabbalah. Because we learn how to move the from the ego-centered desire to the framework of holiness, which is actually all the work that we do since the Garden of Eden. Okay.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It really is. Yeah, I mean, like, your questions are like really good, Alina, because they're helping me to like, all the material is there. We learnt it all together, and yet the questions are pulling it all together now. They're brilliant questions. Have we all got a few more minutes? Do you have to zoom off? It's 8:03. Do you want to do one more paragraph? How about you, Jody? Or Jody, Lena?
I'm okay on for a couple more minutes.
Couple more minutes.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, very good. So let's just do one more paragraph, and then we call, you know, carry on from next week. אמנם נודע שבצם שמתחבא לקדושה, מחויב שוב להתפרש מכל צורת הקבלה, שהשיג משולחן הסיטרא אחרא. כמו שהגיע אלינו מצוות האהבה, ובכל נפשך ובכל מאודיך. ואם כן, מה הועילו חכמים בתקנתם? ושוב, דשוב חזר ועבד כל מה שהשיג מסיטרא אחרא. ודוק היטב. ולפיכך הזמין השכחתו יתברך ויבוי הגופות בכל דור ודור. על דרך שאמרו ז"ל, ראה הצדיקים שהם המורצים, עמד ושתן בכל דור ודור. פירוש, שראה יתברך שסופם של הצדיקים לדחות לגמרי עניין הקבלה העצמית, ונמצאים נתמעטים מאור מקיף שלהם, כי נדחה מהם כלי החיצון הראוי לזה. ועל כן שטלן בכל דור ודור, שאין לך דור שלא יהיה בו חלק גדול מאותן הבריות, שעיקר הבריותן אינם אלא בשביל הצדיקים, שיהיו הם הנושאות בחינת הכלים דחלל הפנוי בשבילם, שיתפעל מבעי הצדיקים בחינת כלי חיצון על ידיהם, על צד ההכרח שלא ברצונם, והוא מפני שכל בני היישוב יש להם דבקות זה עם זה, להתפעל זה מזה, הן בנטיות הגוף והן בדעות, וכן הם המביאים במחויב את הנטיות הקבלה העצמית לצדיקים, שבאופן זה מסוגלים לקבל את אור המקיף הנרצה. This is actually quite an interesting piece, in fact, in which he says, before a person can come into the framework of holiness, he needs to let go of all his forms of receiving that he received from the framework of evil when he was a child. And then he gets to the mitzvah of loving God with all her soul and with all your might. And that's the case, he says. What does all this work avail us? Because he's then gone and lost all those vessels that he attained from the Sitra Achra, which ultimately will be the vessels with which to receive the light of creation, which he calls the surrounding light here. But again, this is the way that God organized things. The divine providence, may he be blessed, increased the number of people in every generation, such that the sages have said, look, the righteous, they are few. So therefore God planted them in every generation. In other words, God foresaw that ultimately the righteous will push away all their receiving for themselves alone. And they therefore will only be able to receive a tiny amount of the light of creation, because they're pushing away the vessels which are fitting for this. Therefore, he planted them in every generation, such that most of the people in every generation, their creation is for the tzaddikim, that they will be the carriers of the ego for the tzaddikim, that will function for the tzaddikim as the carriers of the ego, but they're unconsciously doing that. And the reason is that all the human community have connections with each other, and they are worked on by each other, both in the tendency of the body and in their opinions. And therefore, they bring these vessels of receiving for themselves alone to the tzaddikim, such that the tzaddikim are then able to receive the light of creation in this way. I can really understand this because, you know, like, you know, questions that people have, the difficulties of the world, tzaddikim are not separate from that. They have to deal with them. I mean, you know, we have all this difficulties with the gay parade. That was a recent one, for example. The what's it called? The you know, the Ga'ava thing, the gay parade. Homosexuality and transgender or something might be not according to the Torah, but it doesn't mean to say that the rabbis and the tzaddikim don't have to deal with it now. They do, because it's people and they exist and they're human beings. And what do we do with them? What do we do? Great tzaddikim have to handle these issues. They have to handle all the difficulties that people get into, because we are one community. We have to handle issues of peace and war and issues of terrorism, lo aleinu. We have to handle all these things. And so therefore, the people who are still functioning in the framework of evil and the people who are functioning in the framework of holiness are influencing each other and have connections. It doesn't mean to say that the tzaddikim don't remain tzaddikim. They do, but they have to. Their egos are alike carried by the people who are in the framework of evil. There's a fascinating idea of how we are all contributing one to another. Let's look at that idea again next week. All right? We'll start again there.
Good idea.
Great.
Yeah, because it's complex. Yeah. Wonderful. Very good. Thank you so much. It was a lovely shiur.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.